Hey guys, welcome to Debunked, our podcast where we discuss quite literally everything about anything. My name is Soman, I'll be your host today along with...
Kailash.
So without further ado, let's begin. Today we're going to be discussing some very interesting events that have taken place as of late, and they mostly pertain to astronomy and space exploration. Other than that, though, we will also be giving a small update within our segments on the COVID-19 magazine, and we'll have a very short discussion about the Time Person of the Year controversy. So, let's get right into it. And let's start with the segments first. So, in this segment, we're going to be talking about the COVID-19 vaccine updates. So, you guys might have heard that Pfizer has recently gotten FDA approval for emergency use. And now, there's a final decision pending from the CDC, CDC's advisory council. They have to make a vote, and then soon the vaccines can start being distributed in the US. The only problem with this is that the US also seems to not have pre-ordered enough vaccine for everybody. In fact, I think we're beat by like 11 other countries, even though we have a fairly high population. So not good news. Obviously, the current administration isn't handling this very well. It's not a shock. I mean, we've been hearing that for the past few months, but it's quite relieving to hear that the Pfizer vaccine has been approved over here. And I believe that Britain is already giving the vaccine out, right, Kailash?
Yeah.
So what do you make of this, Kailash? Did I miss any details? Do you have anything to add?
Not necessarily. I mean, it's big news that it's been approved, because now it's like the beginning of the end for this, like, I guess, national nightmare and international nightmare.
Yeah.
That's put, you know, millions of people back into poverty and starvation. Like, if there's one thing to be hopeful for in 2021, it's probably this.
Yeah, I mean, COVID-19 has taken a toll on almost all of us, if not personally. You know, someone we know might have been affected by it, and we've all been put in lockdown various times throughout this year. I think my county has gone back into lockdown, and there's a stay at home order. And I've recently heard that my grandparents in India have been diagnosed with COVID, and they have lots of pre-existing conditions. So I mean, it's not great. It's not been great for all of us collectively. I mean, so it is great news to hear that a vaccine has been approved by the FDA, and it's going to soon be distributed to a lot of us. But I just have like one or two questions regarding the vaccine. What do you think will be some negative repercussions of this? Because I know there's a lot of anti-vaxxers and people not willing to take the vaccine. There's not enough confidence in it. Do you think that the negative side effects, or maybe any sort of, you know how it gets blown out of proportion by certain anti-vaxxers? Do you think it'll happen for this this vaccine as well?
Yeah, almost certainly. People are just distrustful of anything coming from an authority in terms of this whole pandemic. And now that the vaccine is out, there's just going to be more conspiracy theories about, I don't know, how 5G somehow affects the capabilities of the vaccine or something.
Yeah.
People will find a way to just make others distrust something that they don't like. And sadly, that might just make it harder for this pandemic to end.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know. The US is one of a kind in that kind of stuff. I have never seen conspiracy theories float around another country in as high of a magnitude as here. But yeah, I mean, hopefully you guys stay wary of the facts. Don't get fooled or, you know, kind of pulled into these conspiracy theories. So when the scientists say something, they're saying it after they have conducted thorough research and analyzed tons and tons of data, because they wouldn't give out something that will probably become another public health disaster, right? So just, you know, you have to have some level of trust. Now, moving on, let's talk about the Time Person of the Year controversy very briefly. So as you guys may have heard, the Time Person of the Year this year is Kamala Harris and Joe Biden. And there's been a lot of people really, really mad about this. I especially don't get the point of naming the president elects, you know, Time Person of the Year. Obviously, this award is given to the people who have been most influential on the news, but I mean, healthcare workers over here deserve it way, way more than, you know, Biden and Kamala do. So what do you think, Kailash?
I mean, to be fair, it was the people that, like, it's not anything honorific. It's more just people who drove the news the most. And for the two of them, yeah, you could technically say it. But at the same time, you could just say in general, like, healthcare workers, because their efforts against the coronavirus also made a lot of news. And just the response to this virus in general has been among this year's most important headlines.
And then driving the news in general, if you're going to take it as an objective statement, it's both in good and bad ways, you know? So, I mean, Trump has been in the news way more than Biden and Kamala.
And
for bad reasons, but he has.
He did get the Person of the Year when he was elected because, you know.
But, I mean, do you get what I mean, right? This year, Biden and Kamala haven't exactly been the forefront. Like, November was their month now. Okay, see ya. But I don't know. That's just my thoughts on this. Of course, this isn't as major as any other controversies going around, but we thought it needed our attention because we haven't seen many people talking about it. So, moving on from the small news, we can talk about everything that is happening in the world of astronomy. So let's start with the recent aurora expectation. Well, we had an expectation that the aurora is going to come in on Thursday, and it's going to cover a vast area, you know, the solar mass ejection. The solar storm this time would cause the aurora again, and it would be visible from much of northern USA. But it wasn't this time. It missed. So what do you think about that? I know a lot of people who got hyped about it, and you know, they didn't get to see it. Kind of a bummer.
All right, so this aurora, this is really quite spectacular, because think about it, like the only real time you expect to see an aurora is like in the north of Canada, Alaska, very north of Alaska, you know, just the whole Arctic region. And the fact that people who don't live there got to see it, which probably might have been their first time, you know, it's kind of one of the heartwarming things that people needed this year, after everything they've been through. So it's kind of like a kind of unifying moment where everyone was just at peace.
The only thing is that the aurora kind of missed the U.S. or the northern U.S. that it was forecasted to hit.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a big deal that it even got somewhat close.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly take this as a win.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a spectacle that people literally travel to the North Pole to see. And the fact that, you know, the spectacle came to so many people living a little bit south of the area you typically expect it in, I mean, it's a win. Of course, if you guys want to know more about the phenomena behind this, it's essentially caused by, you know, solar storms or solar mass ejections and essentially interacting with Earth's magnetic field and kind of creating this very, very beautiful light show on the poles of Earth. So very, very cool.
All right, guys. So in other news, Jupiter and Saturn will be making their closest ever conjunction this next week. As of the time of this recording, they will be making their closest ever conjunction on December 21st. And in order to have an optimal viewing experience, you can't be in an area with any light pollution, so preferably not in an urban area. And they'll be coming within 0.1 degrees of each other in your sky view, which is pretty impressive, considering that that hasn't happened for nearly 800 years. So the last time this happened, it was essentially the Middle Ages. Somei, what are your thoughts on that?
I honestly think it's really, really cool, because this is, you know, this is a double planet formation. And the fact that not only the fact that it's not happened in the past 800 years, but also the fact that they're separated by only 0.1 degrees, which is essentially less than a full moon's diameter when you look at it from an earthly view in a night sky. It's absolutely mind-boggling, because, you know, this kind of stuff rarely happens, especially with like Saturn and Jupiter's orbital periods, because Jupiter takes about 12 years to go around the sun, whereas Saturn takes a whopping 29 years, which is, you know, almost more than twice what Jupiter's orbital period is. So Jupiter ends up lapping Saturn a couple of times throughout the decades, but never does it get this close. And, you know, it hasn't happened obviously for the past 800 years, because every time it's lapped it, there's been a fairly high degree of separation. But now it's only going to be 0.1 degrees, which is crazy, because you can essentially end up viewing them in the same field of view from your telescope. And, you know, for people who love stargazing and fans of astronomy all over the world, astronomy enthusiasts, everyone is super hyped for this event. Hell, even I'm hyped for this event, and I'm just, you know, I'm generally interested in science and physics to be particular. But I honestly want to see this like live, play out live. I'm thinking of getting a telescope myself within the next week, just to see this event. And then obviously I'm going to use Amazon's return policy and make my money back. But, you know, you got to make some big brain moves over here. But yeah, this is honestly like super, super cool, because their orbit, I mean, I don't know. This kind of stuff doesn't happen very often, and the only other like super hyped astronomical event I've heard of is Halley's Comet, you know, like, and something that can get to this much amount of hype is Halley's Comet, which comes in about every 80 years or so. This one is a little bit more rare, given that it's been able to elude us for the past 800 years. So I mean, I'm just super excited. Although one disclaimer, just so some of you guys don't get this misconstrued, even though to the naked eye they might be appearing like really close, they're still hundreds of millions of miles apart. So just, yeah, keep that in mind. It's cool, but maybe not to the point where you guys think that this is something, you know, something that's an anomaly or something. I don't know. Other than that, though, let's move on to space exploration for our last topic of the day. So, as you guys may have heard, SpaceX conducted their SN8 prototype of the Starship. They conducted a high altitude test for it and tried to perform the belly flop maneuver, which was a resounding success according to the SpaceX team. Even though it might be a little bit misleading towards the end, because it ended up blowing up. So the rocket blowing up doesn't necessarily mark it as a failure, because, I mean, it accomplished what it wanted to perform, which was the belly flop maneuver, which I think is ingenious, because, I mean, I myself, you know, toy around with rocketry simulators multiple times a week, and I'm the head of a rocketry club. I'm the head of engineering for a rocketry club in our school, so, like, you know, it's super cool to see stuff like this happen. Obviously, this maneuver was quite intuitive, very, very, it's a very, very novel idea. And just to describe what happened, the Starship rocket, which is, I think this is the second stage of the Starship rocket, by the way, the SN8 prototype, it went up to an altitude of about 12.5 kilometers or something. ended up turning off its engines gradually, and then it turned over to its side to increase its drag force as it's coasting calmly down to towards our planet's surface again. It's coasting, and it's using its fins as sort of arms and legs, like akin to like a skydiver or something, which is, you know, very, very smart idea. I myself would never have thought of this, and this is very, very smart. So, and then they perform this belly flop maneuver before they perform a retrograde burn to, you know, land the booster stage back, as they do nowadays quite often with the Falcon booster. So, they performed a successful belly flop maneuver. It turned back on its correct axis for retrograde burns. And the only thing that went wrong with it towards landing was that the tank wasn't the fuel header tank wasn't pressurized enough, and that just meant it couldn't decrease its velocity in time before it hit the ground, and you know, it blew up. But again, that's still a pretty big win for SpaceX, because you know, the belly flop maneuver was a very, very big accomplishment for them. What do you think, Kailash? I mean, do you have any thoughts?
This is just their first step on their like larger mission to get to Mars, which they've been saying they want to do like this decade. And this is just like one of the first few successful steps that they'll have to take in what will be like their most challenging mission, I guess, ever. Because right now, yeah, they're doing like trips to the space station, but getting to Mars is a whole different ballgame that, you know, not even the government has fully.
That, I think the Starship has to make flights around the moon, right? I think they're gonna make a lunar prototype for, I mean, a lunar model for it as well. And some dude in 2018 ended up booking a flight on it, like as its first commercial passenger, because the Starship line is supposed to be for commercial use as well in the future, right? And SpaceX so far with their Starship, just to tell you guys how far they've gotten with it, they have already another prototype ready of the SN9, and they're gonna run another test on it maybe next in a couple of weeks. And they're getting the booster stage ready, and the booster stage has a whopping 28 Raptor engines in it. And just to give you guys a sense of scale here, the second stage only had 3 Raptor engines, and you saw it, you know, push such a big vehicle payload up into the sky, 12.5 kilometers up into the sky, and still have fuel left over for a retrograde burn, a belly flop maneuver, and everything. A whopping 28 Raptor engines. The sheer amount of thrust it will produce will be nuts. I mean, I am honestly hyped to see what SpaceX comes up with next. So far, it's leading in the commercial space game, and I honestly think that Elon will be able to accomplish, you know, commercial moon flights by the early 2020s, like maybe 2023, 2024, maybe even 2025, and the Mars exploration might be a real possibility by 2030, but we'll have to see. But the trajectory that they're going on right now is really, really nice. I mean, I was watching the whole test go down live, and you know, my mind kind of exploded when I saw the maneuver that they performed. Absolutely nuts. I have like a couple of questions regarding this for you, Kailash. So do you think that the other companies like Blue Origin or Virgin Galactic will start, you know, catching up to SpaceX anytime soon? Because, you know, I haven't seen any companies perform maneuvers like SpaceX. Obviously, the retrograde burn thing, I think Blue Origin and Virgin Galactic have started trying with their spacecraft, but they're nowhere near what SpaceX is doing. And SpaceX is also producing its IPO, right?
Yeah. So I think really possibly Virgin has a chance of breaking through, but Blue Origin virtually doesn't. They just got in the game way too late. If you think about it, SpaceX has been working on all their technology for over a decade, and that's how they got to where they are now. Blue Origin just started too late to be able to catch up and, you know, overtake SpaceX. at least in the short term, is that's what it's looking like. Maybe in the long term it'll change, but from the way things are right now, I think SpaceX will maintain market dominance and, you know, get all the US government contracts.
Yeah, and not only that, like, its IPO is coming soon, and, you know, lately in the stock market, Elon Musk and Tesla have been like a very hyped stock, and it's kind of breaking the, it's, you know, blowing past the predictions of a lot of economists and like really smart analysts that say that, you know, SpaceX isn't where they expected it would be. It's much higher because of, you know, A, the youth kind of hyping it up, and B, you know, them just making advances over time. The SpaceX IPO, I mean, when that drops, you know, that's going to be one hot stock. What do you think?
I think it'll be much like Tesla, considering that, you know, space, especially just space in general, is going to become a big business in the next few years with space mining and space tourism. It'll become a big industry in the next few years, in the next few decades, and people with the foresight to see that, you know, are clearly investing in, are going to invest in companies like SpaceX.
Most definitely, most definitely. So now I have a follow-up question on how you said, you know, space is going to become a big business in the coming years. You know, of course, we're of that age where we're going to be going to college and, you know, thinking of making startups. Do you think a space startup with, you know, coming from a very small background would be possible? Like, not having that much money in your pocket already?
So here's the thing, right? That depends on so many different factors. Like, if we look at, I know you can't really draw a parallel here, but if you look at companies like in the tech industry, like with the dot-com bubble, Google, Amazon stuff, they grew so large that in just like a decade or two, they were able to just buy out all their competitors or crush them. And it remains to be seen if the space industry will become just like that. But it could very well be possible if, you know, there aren't basically monopolies. It would be possible since the technology would become so much cheaper to produce.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely need the infrastructure again, right, to kind of get things like these started off. Obviously, I think in the near future, we might be able to get space startups, and I'm going to be really excited to see how that goes, you know. I probably might even be an early investor in that or something, maybe even partake in some of it, because I am obviously an avid rocket enthusiast myself. So I'm very excited to see where this is going. But then again, we're going to have to see. Before we leave off, there's a really quick word from our sponsors. So stay tuned for our next episode, where we will discuss something new and break down everything for you. It would be appreciated if you guys could drop us a like and write us a review on your preferred platforms. Go check out our website for more information and check us out on Instagram. Share our podcast with your friends if you liked it. We're really grateful for those of you who've been tuned in so far, and we hope you guys can grow along with us on this journey wherever it takes us. And hit that outro!